Desire and interest in your prayers and attention this morning. I know that we all have enemies and battles in our walk with the Lord. I'd like to talk to us today about a battle that we all will fight. And an enemy that we're going to fight in our walk with the Lord. I was reading, picked up the Pilgrim's Progress. It was either yesterday or the day before, and I was just, I don't know, read the story several times, and I just picked up an older copy of it that I have, and was leafing through there, and I was reading about a Christian coming in contact with Apollyon, and how that Apollyon had him down, representing the devil or Satan, and had him down and knocked his sword away from him, and he said, "Now I've got you." That's what the devil said. But I'm paraphrasing a little bit. And at the last moment, Christian was able to reach out and get a hold of the sword, and he quoted a scripture, and the devil had to take off. You know, he backed up, and he quoted another scripture to him and thrust at him with the sword, and said that he spread his dragon-like wings and flew off, making all kinds of screeching and howling noises. And he didn't come back and bother him anymore. So, you know, that's the way we want. We want to be victorious for the enemies that come against us. And he went through it. When he left that confrontation, he went through another valley that was, it was dark, and he met some people coming back, and they said, "Don't go in there." Said that, "Oh, it's an awful place. You'll never make it through." And on one side was quicksand, and on the other side was a deep ravine where people had slid off of the path. And oh, it was dark and gloomy, and there was all kinds of obstacles. A lot of it was the sounds he was hearing and the things that was going on in his head. Besides, there was one place he says that it was so dark that when he went to take another step, he couldn't be sure where he was putting his foot. It was such a narrow path, and it was so dark and gloomy. And you know, sometimes in the battles that we get in our walk with the Lord, it feels like that. It feels like one side is quicksand that we'll fall in, and the other side is a deep ravine that if we fall off of that precipice, it will surely cause us to be dashed to pieces. And right in the midst of all of that, sometimes it looks like that the that it's so dark and overcast and gloomy that we just can't hardly see where we're putting our next footstep. So I know that there are battles, and there are enemies that each one of us have in particular. There may be something that one of my other brethren has to face and deal with that to me is like, I don't understand. And maybe we don't. And maybe there's times that between the men and the women, there are battles that one faces that's very real. It's very stressful to us. It's something that we feel like is about to overcome us. And the other one, it's like, I don't understand why that's such a big struggle. But there is something that I think we all will face. It doesn't matter what our age is. It doesn't matter what our gender is. It doesn't matter what our background is. We're all going to face this enemy in our walk with the Lord. And he will come against us. It will come against us whatever, however you want to define it, it will come against us at the most inopportune times. I'd like to talk to us today with the help of the Lord about discouragement. Discouragement is something that we're all going to face. It doesn't matter if you're a young person. I can remember when I was young, I faced some things that were very discouraging. And at the time, I felt like it was the worst thing. You know, discouragement always is the worst thing that could ever happen to you. At the time, I thought it was the worst possible thing that could ever happen to me. And as I got older, I've met discouragement many times. The devil, you know, doesn't give up very easily. And he, but this is an enemy to Christianity that he uses over and over and over again. Every phase of our life, he brings discouragement in some shape, form, or fashion. He right in the middle of something you've anticipated. You can anticipate having an addition to your family. You're looking forward to this little child coming into your world. And I promise you that somewhere in the course of life, after that little child gets there, there's going to be something that's discouraging happen. You can be discouraged because you're constantly taking care of their needs and you don't have any time for anything else. And you can be discouraged. You can be looking forward to something else in your life, and then right on the heels of that thing materializing in your life, here comes discouragement. And we realize that this is something that's trying to overpower me. And I've found that just because I've got gray hair, and just because my children are mostly raised, and just because the wolf is maybe not at the door, so to speak, I still have to face discouragement. And it comes in all different sizes and all different shapes. I'd like to look in 1 Samuel, the 27th chapter. I want to notice a story here that we're just pick up on some of it. We'll talk about it a little bit. That happened back here that I think we're all familiar with. The story is about David. And David had, at the point we're going to pick up, David has been anointed king of Israel by Samuel. But Samuel has passed away, and he's still not king. And David had become, you might say, the encouragement for King Saul. And God had told Saul that his kingdom would end. Told him that because he had been disobedient and rebellious, and he had not followed his instruction, that the kingdom would be taken away from his lineage and given to someone else. And Saul dealt with the scripture talks like it's an evil spirit, discouragement, despondency, and David tried to do everything that man can to try to cheer him up. You know, one of the things that if you go to a psychiatrist and you're struggling with discouragement, they're going to probably ask what you do, and they're going to make some suggestions. You know, if you live in a house without any lights hardly on, and everything's painted dark colors, they're probably going to tell you to change your surroundings some. They're going to tell you to maybe listen to some upbeat music or something like that. And what did we see David doing for Saul but playing the harp, playing something that could be uplifting? And you know, his mood did change while David was playing many times. And over the years, over time, David became very intimately acquainted with Saul, did he not? He was in his household. He was in love with his daughter. His daughter was, Saul's daughter was devoted to David. And Jonathan was his best friend. They were close as two peas in a pod. They were just, they did things together. And David knew that Samuel had anointed him king, and yet he did not try to displace Saul. He was allowing God to take care of that. He was, you might say, behaving himself very honorably. Some people that had been, that could be honored by being anointed king might have tried to assert themselves, but David didn't do that. He learned how maybe to take care of governing the people by observing the King Saul. I get in my mind that David was just fully integrated into Saul's life. All right. And as time went on and as time developed, he realized, Saul realized, that David really was going to be the next king. And Saul had a serious problem because he had left the Lord with jealousy, with anger, and his, what should have been his devotion and his building a good solid relationship with this man that was going to be the king, and it was his son-in-law at this time and all of that. Instead of that, it seemed like he allowed the events and circumstances to build this hatred in him where he wanted to take David out. He wanted to kill him. And we read through the book of 1 Samuel and we find that on two different occasions, Saul basically played into the hand of David, and David could have took his life, but he didn't. Many times when things are developing that are adverse to us, maybe accusations coming from other people, maybe feeling like we're not being able to realize our full potential. Many times because of maybe youth, David was young. Maybe because of your hopes and aspirations and dreams and all of that, maybe you can resist a lot of the confrontations of the enemy. And maybe you're able to keep it all together, so to speak. You know, I believe David had integrity with God. And I believe that he sincerely did not want to hurt the Lord's anointed. And that's what he said. And I believe that. I believe he was sincere. I don't believe he was harboring animosity towards King Saul, even though King Saul harbored it toward him. All right? So, after the last time that King Saul had come looking for him, intent to kill him, and David had spared his life, and King Saul had repented and said, "Oh, I shouldn't have done that. I'll do better." I'd like to maybe start reading. In the 24th verse of the 26th chapter of 1 Samuel. "And behold, as thy life was much set by this day in mine eyes, so let my life be much set by in the eyes of the Lord, and let them deliver me out of all tribulation. Let him deliver me out of all tribulations. Then Saul said to David, Blessed be thou, my son David." Oh, he's trying to patch it up, isn't he? A little bit. He says, thou shalt both do great things and also shalt still prevail. So David went on his way and Saul returned to his place. Now, I don't know what you think about that type of setting and the confrontation that had happened between David and Saul. And there had been no bloodshed there. But it was very stressful. There's no way around it, but David and Saul both felt a lot of pressure at that point. And I imagine David was he felt a responsibility to God, and many times we feel a responsibility to God to perform in a certain way. But as we look at this story, in the next chapter, beginning in the first verse, it says, and David said in his heart, I shall now perish one day by the hand of Saul. There is nothing better for me than that I should speedily escape into the land of the Philistines. Discouragement had set in. David looked on, and he realized Saul had basically repented for coming and trying to kill him. But as he realized that Saul didn't really have a connection to God. And you know, one of the most discouraging things that can happen is when we begin to look on at the evidence, and we begin to look on at the circumstances and the things that have developed in our lives, when we realize that it's probably never going to get better, the chances of Saul truly turning around and being my ally instead of my adversary, not good. And David said in his heart, not just from his lips, but down deep in his heart, I shall now perish one day by the hand of Saul. One of these days, Saul's going to get me. There is nothing better for me than I should speedily escape into the land of the Philistines. And Saul shall despair of me to seek me anymore. Seek any more in any coast of Israel, so shall I escape out of his hand. And that's what he did. David went down into the land of the Philistines. Now, when he was there, you know, that's the enemy territory. And he went down to the enemy territory, and many times discouragement will cause us to begin to look into areas of that we shouldn't be going. Discouragement will cause us to begin to entertain the idea that that's my only escape route. And David went down into the land of the Philistines, and He done some irrational things. And comments in one of the commentaries about David's actions, he went out and destroyed some of the people that were actually descendants and relatives of the Philistines, and drove them out. And I mean, he slaughtered them. And then he come back and professed to the Philistines that he had actually went out and kill some of his own Israelites because of his exile. He didn't tell the truth. You know, discouragement will take us into a treacherous place where we'll begin to do things that's not very sensible. And one of the commentaries that was talking about this said, there's nothing about David's actions there that be esteemed as the right thing. He went to the enemy territory. He done some things that were not directed by the Lord. And he became an ally to the enemy of the Israelites. And he was in good favor with Achish or Achish, however you say his name, one of the kings of Gath, and he lived there for over a year and 4 months, if you read through that chapter and the next chapter. And David was struggling with discouragement, realizing that the odds were that if he ever went back to Israel and tried to be an Israelite, that Saul was going to kill him. Now that's discouraging, isn't it? You know, one of the most discouraging things that we can ever have is to realize that the very people or the very persons that should be close to us, your father-in-law, you ought to be close to him if at all possible, you know, realize that there's something going on here. He'll take my life. He'll destroy me if possible. You know, that's grounds to be discouraged. David had grounds to be discouraged. And I find in my own self that there are times that, you know, wanting to be able to rely on those that should be close to me, if I can't, that's very discouraging to me, and that's a battle I have to face. And we're not trying to fix other people so much this morning as understanding that discouragement is something that we're all going to have to face, and we've got to get above it. We've got to rise above it with the help of the Lord. And if we turn to page or two here in Samuel, we'll take this story a little further. David, after he had proved himself, per se, with the Philistines and this king of Gath, it came a time that the Philistines were going to go to war with maybe other nations too, but specifically the nation of Israel. And the king of Gath said to David, well, you're going to go with us. You're one of us now. And David was preparing to go with them. And I don't know if they went to other battles or not. But this king told him, said, you're the keeper of my head. I trust you completely. And when they got ready to go to battle with Israel, some of the other rulers in the Philistines says, well, hold on just a minute here. That's David. Do you know who we got in our ranks here? What better place for David to make up or mend his ways with his people than to turn against us right in the middle of the battle? And the king of Gath said, no, you don't understand. David, he's proved himself. I can trust him. He's one of us now. And they said, oh no, he's not going to battle with us. So I don't know how long they had been away from the city that they had dwelled in. It's called Ziklag. But the Achish told him, said, just you take your men and go on home. The others won't accept you. So David, he said, but I want you to know I trust you and I depend on you. So David and his men went back. And beginning in the 30th chapter, I want to read another place where discouragement came in to David. Beginning in verse 1, it says, and it came to pass when David and his men were come to Ziklag on the third day that the Amalekites had invaded the south, and Ziklag had south and Ziklag, and then smitten Ziklag and burned it with fire, and had taken the women captives that were therein. They slew not any, either great or small, but carried them away and went on their way. And David and his men came to the city, and behold, it was burned with fire. And their wives and their sons and their daughters were taken captive. Then David and the people that were with him lifted up their voice and wept until they had no more power to weep. Now that's getting down to the bottom, isn't it? And so it says here in verse 5, and David's two wives were taken captives. Ahinoam the Jezreelitess, and Abigail the wife of Nabal the Carmelite. And David was greatly distressed, for the people spake of stoning him because the soul of all the people was grieved, every man for his sons and for his daughters. But David encouraged himself in the Lord his God. So David here was met with another situation where the people that were closest to him, these 600 men, these 600 men had left their inheritances in the land of Israel and had aligned themselves with David because they believed he had been anointed king of Israel. They had aligned himself and followed him and had defended him and his cause in many a skirmish. They had come under his rule, his authority. I don't know what it would be like to have 600 brothers. But if you could think of having 600 brothers, I feel like that's the kind of relationship they had. These men were close. They did things together. There was mighty men in these ranks. There were men here that were fearless in the face of the battles. Literal battles that they fought. These men and David had a long-term relationship. And when they come back and seen everything carried away, what were they ready to do? They were ready to kill him too. Now, just a couple chapters ago, we was reading about what he faced with Saul. A year or so before, maybe 2 years, I don't know how long it was. He says here, and David was greatly distressed, for the people spake of stoning him, because the soul of all the people was grieved, every man for his... They had cried and wept until there wasn't any more power to weep, and then they realized, you know, if we hadn't followed David and aligned ourselves with him, we wouldn't be in this place. We'd be living in Israel. We'd be living on our inherited land instead of some foreign place that we're having to prove ourselves all the time. We could be living in our inheritance over there. But instead, we're here with David. We followed him around on all of these kind of escapades, and now we're facing this heartache. Maybe we ought to just stone David. So David was discouraged, was he not? I'd be discouraged too. And it says he encouraged himself in the Lord his God. And that's something that we need to know how to do. Because, you know, it's pretty easy to be encouraged when things are going your way. You know, if his men had been having a celebration of his leadership, it'd be pretty easy to be encouraged in the Lord, wouldn't it? If King Saul had treated him with respect and told him, now listen, I know that I've had a big failure in my life, and I know God's told me that my sons are not going to be king, but I want to do everything I can to help you be the best king you possibly can. These are God's people. You know, David could have been encouraged, but instead, he was facing discouragement. All right? So it goes on to say, and David said to Abiathar the priest, Ahimelech's son, I pray thee, bring me hither the ephod. And Abiathar brought thither the ephod to David. Now, remember, they're in Ziklag. They're not in Jerusalem. They're not by the tabernacle that's in that area. They're away from home, but he has one of the priests that's with him that has left Saul because Saul doesn't worship God any longer. The priest came with him and he brought the ephod. You know what the ephod was? It's a garment that the high priest wore. All right? So David said, they didn't have the tabernacle to go to. He didn't have the altar. Didn't have the Ark of the Covenant. But he had the priest's garment. And he said here, bring the ephod out. So the priest that was with him brought the ephod. And David inquired at the Lord, saying, shall I pursue after this troop? Shall I overtake them? And he answered him, pursue. Thou shalt surely overtake them, and without fail recover all. Now, those were real happy words for him to hear. But we notice here that David encouraged himself in the Lord when he faced this big, monumental discouragement. And then he sought for a place to ask wisdom of God. All right? So one of the most typical things for us to do when we're discouraged is to run off somewheres. David did. When he was discouraged with the situation he had with Saul, he left. And then somewheres in our battle with discouragement, we're going to have to realize that the only way to rise above that is not by running. You know, we can drive to the next county. We can quit our job and load up our clothes and tools and go to the next state and try to start over. But you know, if we don't really know how to face discouragement, it'll just come again. And that's what happened to David. He got over there in the enemy's territory because he had run from a discouraging situation. And it was a hopeless situation. I understand that. And we all have had or will have hopeless situations in our life. And he ran from that. And he got over here all by himself. He wasn't even in the land, the area that was home to him. He was over there in that, surrounded by enemies, you might say, foreign people. And he had to encourage himself in the Lord. That's our number one connection to rising above discouragement. And then he asked the priest to bring the ephod. I want to tell you one of the greatest ways to defeat this enemy called discouragement is to put yourself in a place where God can speak to you. You know, when we're in, when we're discouraged, we're tempted to stay home and maybe stay in bed and keep the lights turned out, and we don't want to talk to nobody and we don't want to hear anybody anything and all of that. But I'm going to tell you, the best thing we can do is go where the ephod is at. And in our dispensation that we live in, that means wash your face, put some clothes on, and come to service. That's what it means. Lord, help us when we're fighting discouragement. The thing that we're most likely to do is to go hide under the bed, so to speak. But the thing that we ought to do is ask the Lord to help us and come to church. That's what we ought. You know, you might hear something that'll help you here. And I'm going to tell you, if you're hiding under the bed, you're going to hear something there too. But it's going to be the enemy saying, it's dark under here. Don't you feel bad? Well, I'm sure that they're all talking about you. I mean, discouragement only gets worse when you're hiding in the dark. There is no way for you to rise above this battle, this enemy of discouragement, by just feeling sorry for yourself. It only gets worse. I'd like to go to 1 Corinthians, the 10th chapter, over in the New Testament here. The Apostle Paul tells us something that I know we all know this. This is a common verse. 1 Corinthians, the 10th chapter and the 13th verse says, there is no temptation. I not only highlighted this verse, but I've underlined several words in this verse. There is no temptation taking you But such as is common to man, and discouragement is common to every one of us. It says here, but God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that you are able, but will with the temptation also make a way to escape, that you may be able to bear it. You know, Brother Ivan had a message at Myrtle, and he was talking about, he gave an illustration, he just about run out of gas. I mean, it was like on E for a long time. And he was out in like New Mexico or someplace where they just don't have gas every 10 miles. And he was driving along on the interstate, and he had checked the map, and he was, I don't know, 40 miles to the next next town that could possibly have gas. And the gauge, his little fuel computer said 0 miles to empty. And he was really beginning to be worried. And he said, as he got closer and closer, and he said, he made it to the gas station, and he pulled in, and he said, I shut it off real quick because I didn't want it to run out of gas. And he said, you know why I run out of gas? He says, it's because the last exit, the place to buy gas, he said, I thought it was too high, so I didn't stop and buy any. You know, he said, when I found gas, it didn't matter what price it was. He said, I was filling up. You know, many times our way of escape is one of those exits. And we may look over there and say, it's just too much effort to get up and mix and mingle with other people. It's too much effort to go and inquire of the ephod. It's too much effort to try to push through this discouragement I'm facing and be prepared to have something for Sunday. You know, the enemy comes along and says, I wouldn't do it. I would just tell them that you're tapped out. I would just tell them you just can't make it. But that's not what we're supposed to do. He says here, there's no, we all are going to face this. And discouragement is always bigger than we are. No matter how big or how strong we are, spiritually, physically, whatever, discouragement is always bigger than us. And if we allow ourselves, we'll pass the exit because we think it's cost too much. We'll think, surely there's an easier way. Surely somebody's going to come along and say, you poor thing, here, let me help you with that. But if we're waiting on that, it might not happen. You might just run out. You might find yourself along the road of life completely out of fuel. And that's what the enemy, the enemy wants to overpower us. And if he can overpower us with something as simple as discouragement, he's going to be grinning from ear to ear. Lord, help us not to pass up the opportunity to get fueled up and to be able to defeat the enemy. I want to take advantage of it, and I need your prayers. I'd like to go to Numbers now, the 32nd chapter, and notice a passage of Scripture here. The Israelites, you remember, had came up to go into the land of Canaan and sent some spies in, and the spies came back with a report. The report was that the land is a prosperous land, but it includes giants. And I want you to know that in Pilgrim's Progress, there was a character in there called Giant Despair. And that's why I said discouragement is always bigger than us. And I've never met a giant like maybe Goliath, but I've met some pretty overpowering figures in my life. I remember a man that used to come in when we were there in Veneta, and he was close to 7 feet tall, and he was just a big man. I don't know how much the man weighed, but he was a big old farmer, rancher fella, and he would come in, and I always felt like a little shrimp when he would come in. But, you know, that's the way discouragement is. It's a big old burly, one giant despair caught a Christian and his companion. I can't remember if that was Hopeful or who it was with him at the time. But when he caught him on his side of the fence, he overpowered them. One man, one giant, two little Christians, he overpowered them and beat them up and put them in the dungeon. You know, the problem is for Christian as he got on giant despair's territory. And we'll get there if we're not careful. We'll face some things and we'll start allowing discouragement to build, and we'll get in the giant despair's territory, and if we're not careful, he'll conk us on the head and put us in the dungeon. He'll put us in a place where it doesn't look like we can get out. And while we're there in being confined, you remember what was in that dungeon? There were bones of people that had died there. And you know, one of the pieces of ammunition that the devil uses against us in discouragement is he'll tell us, you know, other people have not survived this. They succumbed to it. They threw up their hands. They quit. They said, I'm done. I'm through. I'm out of here. All of those kind of things. And we'll see bones all around us. And Christian's companion, I know, he was just ready to, well, I think the giant even suggested that they hang themselves while they was in there. You know, he'll suggest that to you too? When was the book of Pilgrim's Progress written? Many years ago, about the time that the King James Bible was translated. Well, you know, if the suggestion for suicide was then, it's much more prevalent today. The enemy wants to get people discouraged and say, you know, you might as well. I mean, everybody, look at all these other people. They never rose above this discouraging feeling. You might as well just take yourself out. I'm going to tell you, that's a trick of the devil. It's not the way out that we want to take. We want to stand on that sea of glass that we talked about in our Sunday school this morning. So I want to pick up the story here in Numbers 32. And we're talking about the people a generation or so later than the ones that heard the spies report and said, oh my, we can't go over there because there's giants. So they're getting ready to go into the Canaan land to divide up the land and conquer it. And they're getting up close to it, and some people came. We're just going to read about them here. Beginning in verse 1, it says, now the children of Reuben and the children of Gad had a very great multitude of cattle. And when they saw the land of Jazer and the land of Gilead, and behold, the place was a place for cattle, the children of Gad and the children of Reuben came and spake unto Moses and to Eleazar the priest and unto the princes of the congregation, saying, Ataroth and Dibon and Jazer and Nimrah and Heshbon and Eliah and Sheba and Nebo and beyond, even the country which the Lord smote before the congregation of Israel is a land for cattle. and my servants have cattle. Now that makes sense. You got cattle, you need a place for cattle. Therefore, said they, if we have found grace in thy sight, let this land be given unto thy servants for a possession, and bring us not over Jordan. And Moses said unto the children of Gad and to the children of Reuben, shall your brethren go to war, and shall ye sit here? And wherefore discourage ye the heart of the children of Israel from going over into the land which the Lord hath given them? Thus did your fathers when I sent them from Kadesh Barnea to see the land. And when they came unto the valley of Eshcol and saw the land, they discouraged the heart of the children of Israel that they should not go into the land which the Lord hath given them. And the Lord's anger was kindled the same time, and he sware, saying, okay, I'm going to stop there. Our choices to not be with our brothers and sisters when they come together to worship the Lord and to lift up His cause and to be part of the worship to the Lord. Our choices to not do that will be a source of discouragement to others. And when, if we, like these men here, these two tribes, they said, we got cattle, we found a place for cattle, just let us take this. And Moses said to them, that's going to be a source of discouragement. And I want us to know that we, as the song that we have that I believe Sister Angela wrote, we need each other, brethren. One of the greatest things that we can do for one another is be there for one another. And by being there for one another and our need for one another, it helps us to defeat discouragement. Discouragement is a mighty foe. And I can't do it in myself. I have to have the Lord, but I need your help too. And when we come together, an empty vessel to vessel, when we come together and lift our voices up in praise to the Lord, it's an encouragement. You know, have you ever been in a dark place and you felt there was something else there and you didn't know what it was? It can be kind of fearful, can't it? I remember, sometimes it's our imagination. I remember waking up, I've told this story many times, but waking up as a young boy, and outside of my bedroom window was a street light. Lived in town, and I'm sure there were curtains or something on the window, but you know, there was this kind of glow coming through the whatever was over the windows, and I was laying in my bed. I was probably in grade school at the oldest, maybe first or second grade. And over next to the door of my bedroom, I had this, we called it a hat tree. And I'd hang my jacket on there, and I had a cowboy hat I'd put on top of that. So over next to the door was my jacket and a cowboy hat on top. And the glow coming through the window, I don't know why I woke up in the middle of the night, but it was dark and the house was quiet. And I just kind of looked over there, and there's a man. There's a man standing in my bedroom. And I'm going to tell you, my little mind went into a whirl, and all of a sudden, it was like I felt the presence of something in the room. And oh, you're talking about fear gripping my heart. And I was so apprehensive. I looked and I watched and I watched. I don't know how long I watched that jacket and that cowboy hat to see if it moved, because I just knew they were waiting to get me. But after a period of time and my mind got alert enough, I think I finally realized what it was. And I remember getting out of bed and making a beeline for the door. I didn't stop to check if anything was in my jacket, okay? I just boom, I went past my jacket and I went to my parents' room, and I needed some reassurance is what I needed, that everything was okay. But, you know, we can be in those situations where there's apprehensive presences that causes us to be discouraged. But the reciprocal of that is true too. When we come together and we know that somebody is there, and they care for us, and they love us, and they have a level of appreciate, you know, our courage to fight whatever giant despair we're coming up against, it can help us be victorious. So I want to encourage us, and I want to challenge us to be a help, not a detriment to one another. You know, there's a lot of things that we can be discouraged about. We can be discouraged because we don't have enough money. We can be discouraged because something happened on the job and we don't feel like we're being successful in our occupation. We can be discouraged because we lost a friend. Somebody told us, I don't like you anymore. Whether we're in school or whether we're an adult, we can all face that. I remember being in school and somebody saying, well, you're not my friend anymore. It's like, you don't even know what you did sometimes. But as an adult, we can have that same thing happen. Somebody that we thought was our friend, and they could maybe cut it off and tell us, I don't want to see you anymore. Get off my place and don't come back. Probably the worst discouragement that we'll face is feeling rejection by those that you love or have maybe the closest relationship with, and realizing you don't matter anymore. And it really doesn't, is nothing that you can do different, but knowing that they don't care whether you're there or not. And maybe you feel pushed away. You know, this is why divorce has such devastating consequences in our world. It's because those that should love and should nurture and should cultivate relationships, they're being pushed away. And it causes discouragement to be such a big giant. I'd like to turn, maybe to close our thought, to Psalms, the 73rd Psalm. And notice this, what the psalmist says here. This has helped me many times in my life. And I wish that I had this small little antidote that I could give you. And if you'd put it under your tongue or swallow two of them or something like that, that all discouragement would just vanish away. But I don't have a quick fix. I do know where the fix is. I do know how to rise above it. I want you to know it's just as hard for me to put it in practice as it is anybody else. All right? But in the 73rd Psalm, the psalmist says here in the second verse, but as for me, my feet were almost gone, and my steps had well nigh slipped. I want you to know that I've been there, and you probably have been too. You've probably been in those places where you felt like you were almost overcome. And maybe you've entertained the ideas of throwing in the towel, of giving up on relationships, of giving up on whatever it is that's the situation that's making you be discouraged. But I want to skip on down to the 13th verse. He says, verily I have cleansed my heart in vain and washed my hands in innocency. Have you ever felt like you've done everything you possibly knew to do and it didn't work? That's another reason to be discouraged, isn't it? When you feel like you've done everything that you can possibly do to fix, amend, and it don't work. I've done it in vain, the psalmist says. He says, for all the day long have I been plagued and chastened every morning. this thing is constant. You know, the thing about discouragement is you don't have to go any special place to get it. It'll go home with you. It'll follow you wherever you are. And he says here, for all the day long have I been plagued and chastened every morning. If I say I will speak thus, behold, I should offend against the generation of thy children. I can't ever say the right word. I can't ever do the right thing. It's never, you know, many times, and I've tried to adopt this policy in my work, but it doesn't always pan out like I want it to. As somebody comes in and they say, my vehicle's making a noise. Well, that's a really, really broad subject, and I really, really want somebody to take me for a ride and show me the noise, because I've been down the road. I'm talking about the verse here where it says, I will speak thus, and behold, I should offend against the generation of thy children. I've been there many times. Somebody comes in, truck makes a noise, car makes a noise. You go out and you listen. Yes, it's making a noise. And you find the source of that noise. You might tighten up a loose spare tire in the back, you know, that's clunking around. I fix the noise. I don't hear that anymore. And customer comes and gets it. They don't even get out of the parking lot and come back. Oh, still making that noise. I don't know why you can't fix that noise. All right. Let's go listen. You go listen. Not what they was hearing. They wasn't hearing the clunking of the spare tire. They was hearing the rattle of the change in the ashtray. I know. I've been there. You just can't do the right thing sometimes. And that causes us to be more discouraged, doesn't it? And he says here, when I thought to know this, it was too painful for me. When I came to the realization, and we come to those places sometimes, we realize that my best efforts are failing. That's a reason to be discouraged, isn't it? If we do the very best we can and it's not good enough, I mean, the next thing is, that's what leads to discouragement. And he says here in the next verse, until I went into the sanctuary of God, then understood I therein. It's important, folks, that we inquire of the ephod. It's important that at the time when we feel like we can't, that we do. You understand what I'm saying? When we get to the point we feel like I just can't do it. I can't make myself. I can't be encouraged. David said he encouraged himself in the Lord. And, you know, I think it's literally impossible to pull yourself up by your own bootstraps, don't you? But a lot of us have heard that. I've heard it all my life. Well, he just pulled himself up by his own bootstraps. Well, it's a figure of speech that somebody reached down within their self somewheres and said, there's got to be an answer here. And I'm going to tell you, there's got to be an answer to discouragement. And the only answer that I know of is inquiring of the ephod, is turning to the Lord in the time of my distress. When I feel like I'm going to be stoned, when I feel like that there's no place to turn. I can't say the right words. I can't do the right thing. Everything I attempt is a failure, it appears to be. But right during that time, if I will avail myself, what did David say here? Or the psalmist Asaph says, until I went into the sanctuary, the place where God's going to be. When I get to that place, then I'm going to be able to gain some victory. And that's the only place. In Psalms 121, we'll read this for our encouragement. Psalms 121, beginning in verse 1, he says, I will lift up mine eyes unto the hills from whence cometh my help. My help cometh from the Lord, not from somebody feeling sorry for you, okay? Which made heavens and earth. He will not suffer thy foot to be moved. He that keepeth thee will not slumber. He's not going to slumber. He's not going to go to sleep on you. He's not going to allow you to be overcome, even though this devil says, look at all of these bones laying around here. Everybody else took their own life. Everybody else gave up and quit trying, and you might as well do it too. He says, I won't suffer thy foot to be moved. He that keepeth thee will not slumber. Behold, he that keepeth Israel shall neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord is thy keeper. The Lord is thy shade upon thy right hand. The sun shall not smite thee by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord shall preserve thee from all evil. He shall preserve thy soul. The Lord shall preserve thy going out and thy coming in from this time forth, even forevermore. So I want to say this. If you've struggled with discouragement in the past, I mean like succumb to it, from now on, you don't have to. You don't have to. The Lord will help you. But the Lord's not going to take it away. You're still going to meet Him, all right? I'd like to think I'd get old enough to where I wouldn't get discouraged. But so far what I've found is it don't happen. The older I get, my giant just comes from a different direction. The things that used to discourage me and I've been able to gain some victory in, they don't bother me anymore like that. The idea of being discouraged because I might not live long enough to get a driver's license, it don't happen anymore. I've been driving longer now than I did before that, you see. So that's not a discouragement to me. But I face things now that I didn't realize was out there. And I'm sure if I live another 10 or 20 years, that I'll face some more things that I didn't know was out there. But I know, I'm convinced that I don't have to die in the old dungeon of giant despair. I don't have to do that. I can rise up. I've got to avail myself of the grace of God. I've got to push through to Him. I've got to inquire of the ephod. I've got to not allow myself to just crawl under the bed, so to speak. I've got to push through that with the help of the Lord. What did the psalmist say? But it's fit for me and my... I was just almost gone. I was almost overwhelmed. My foot had well nigh slipped. Until when? Until he got in the house of the Lord. I believe the Lord can meet us anywhere at a moment's notice. But don't pass up the exit to be in service. That's one of the best places to come to get an uplift to our soul. You pray for me.